Today we have Harriet Walker in the house. How are you, Harriet?
Very well, thanks, Greg.
Today we're going to talk about something very close to you, nutrition for strength sports.
Yeah, that's my forte.
Should I give a shit?
Well, are you a strength athlete, Greg?
I love lifting stuff.
Fabulous. This is for you then.
Let's go. Everyone listen.
Welcome to the Body Science Podcast, bringing you everything you need, want, and should know about health, fitness, nutrition, and training. As always, the information contained in this podcast is for the information purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or be prescriptive to treat, prevent, or manage any injury, disease, or other health-related condition.
Burn the fat and feed the muscles with this high-protein, low-carb, low-fat, best-tasting daily protein powder. Hydroxyburnlean 5 proteins are released in a sustained chronological order, therefore maintaining their different absorption rates, fast and slow, ensuring constant muscle fuel so you stay fit, happy and healthy. This synergistic blend also includes 17 vitamins and minerals, added carnitine, and a proprietary blend of digestive enzymes, Digizyme, and Arafti prebiotic to aid digestive health.
Welcome to Body Science HQ, the world of fit, happy, healthy. Today, Harriet Walker, registered dietitian, registered sports nutritionist. Everyone's girl crush at the moment. People are digging you big time. We're getting lots of good feedback on what you do here in podcast-wise and what you're doing face-to-face for us.
Because I've got good hair, Greg.
Good hair, is that what it's about?
Yep.
Well, I won't go there, but let's talk about nutrition for strength sports.
Yes, fantastic.
I'm going to throw this right out. Why are we discussing this?
Well, this time of year, it tends to be a pretty hot topic because we're coming into Arnold season. So we've got bodybuilders, powerlifters, strong people all getting set for Arnold's in a few weeks' time. And we've also got nationals coming up for all the different strength sports in the first half of the year. So it's a really important topic, I think. You know, I'm seeing a lot of my clients now covering this stuff off. But also, I mean, there is a big increase in the amount of people taking up strength sport. And I think it's kind of important to sort of make the differentiation between like nutrition for bodybuilding, say, versus nutrition for strength sports, where training might be a little bit different, that the actual
not as trendy either, is it?
Strength sports or
no, the nutrition side of like throwing
no,
it out.
No, it's what, not. It's yeah. not. And I think, you know, a lot of people move from bodybuilding into strength sports, and sometimes we get stuck in the sort of bodybuilding focus when really when we're looking at athletic performance and strength sport, there are a few little differences that we need to kind of make people aware of. So it's a good topic.
So it's not a one size fits all concept.
No, we're definitely Certainly not. So when we're looking at strength sports, where I'm kind of talking about Olympic lifting. We're looking at strongman, strongwoman. We're looking at powerlifting. We're looking at even CrossFit to an extent. Obviously, there's a bit of a hybrid in there with CrossFit. However, anything where you know the focus is on maximal lifting and not so much on aesthetics or long duration of time. That's kind of what we're looking at when we're looking at strength sports.
Still suitable for my 5 day a week functional trainer.
Yeah, absolutely. I think where there's a component of weightlifting, it's important to, I suppose, understand what goes into building muscle. And especially in the world where, you know, dieting and restrictive eating behaviors appears to be the key, which, you know, I've got a lot to say about that. But we want to make sure that people are actually eating adequately in order to make the most of their training as well. So less is not more when it comes to strength sports.
Nice. So what are the characteristics of a strength athlete? What are you looking for when someone walks in?
Well, I think the good thing about strength sports is not like anybody can be a strength sport athlete. You don't have to, it's not necessarily a specific body type. Obviously levers, people with, you know, short legs, long arms are normally pretty good deadlifters.
Yep.
But for the most part, you know, we can be working with anybody to make them a strength athlete. The one thing that I think attracts people after bodybuilding, say, to strength-based sports is the fact that you don't, leanness is not necessarily a key attribute or even advantageous in the same way that it is for bodybuilding or for like endurance sport. Mm-hmm. You know, with endurance sport, riding, running, swimming, you know, they'll as little anything, like it doesn't matter if it's muscle or fat, as long as you're carrying as little as possible on your body, the faster you're going to go. Whereas, in strength sports, you know, you want to be carrying as much mass as possible, functional mass, and even extra fat mass in some cases is mass moves mass. So, you know, leanness is not so much a big deal. Muscle mass is definitely a big deal. So we're looking at a higher muscle mass in strength athletes. We want to be able to build the capacity to move the weight. You know, there's weight classes in a lot of strength sports. So Olympic lifting, powerlifting, strongman, they all have a component in the more advanced advanced competitions, they have the weight classes. So we are talking a little bit about day-to-day nutrition for strength sport, but we can also, I think we'll do another podcast on another day about acute weight loss for strength sport. So like making weight, essentially. Okay. That's a whole another kettle of fish. But basically, long and short, if you're interested in lifting up heavy things and feeling fit and strong, then strength sport, you know, anyone can sort of turn themselves into a strength athlete.
And with your strength athlete coming to see you, and I mean, obviously you lift heavy, you do a lot of, where do you compete in?
I'm about to compete in the Arnolds, which is good. So I do strong man, strong lady training. It's hard to explain
strong
that to
lady.
My mum. Yeah.
Nice. I like
compete
that.
In strong man, mum. What? Long story. Essentially, yeah, I've got a background in bodybuilding. I've done a lot of endurance sport as well. So rowing and surfboat rowing. But yeah, the strength-based sport at the moment is my gig. So I end up talking about this to a lot of people.
So do you, when you talk about weight loss, obviously people talk about being in a long time rut a lot, and that's, you know, they're struggling and they actually get to a dietitian once they've tried everything. Do you have the same thing with strength athlete nutrition?
A little bit. I think there's a bit of a transition. If you've started a strength-based sport coming from another sport, like it might be endurance running or it might be bodybuilding, whatnot, there is a bit of a paradigm shift that needs to happen for people, understanding that, like, these days there's every week there's a new weight loss diet on the market. But the good thing about strength, what I think, is the message is not about being as small as possible, which is a really nice and positive message. I mean, you know, it's a contrast for women not to want to be smaller. We actually were trying to get bigger in some instances, and you don't have to be huge to weightlift, obviously. It's actually having a conversation about not restricting your diet. It's actually reversing the conversation and encouraging people to be eating adequately in order to be able to perform properly. So it can actually freak people out quite a bit when they first come to see me and they're looking at putting on some lean muscle mass. Actually, the extra calories they get to eat, but you'll find very quickly that people are pretty happy about doing that after a while.
Well,
but
it's long-term performance, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And when you look at the physiological demands on the body in order to build lean muscle mass, it becomes pretty apparent pretty quickly, depending on where you're starting from, that you can't get anywhere eating less. You need to be adding in and you need to be focusing on your diet in order to, you know, if you're going to the gym, putting in all that training, you want to be backing it up with your nutrition.
So when an athlete comes to you who's looking at like a strength athlete, what are some of their goals they're looking at? Like what things are you addressing when it comes to nutrition?
Well, there would be, just on a very sort of top level perspective, there would be three main goals that I'm looking at in terms of strength sports nutrition. I want to be able to promote the muscular adaptations, fancy word. I want to be able to make sure that the people are going to the gym, they're doing the work, and they can back up that work with proper nutrition. So we want to make the most of those adaptations that they are stimulating in the gym. We want to make sure that they have enough of the building blocks to be able to build that muscle after their training session. And we also want to make sure that they have enough energy in the tank to be able to do the session. So we're looking at, you know, day to day, week to week, but we're also looking at that peri training, before, after training, during training.
So you are looking at during training nutrition?
Potentially. Okay. Yeah, potentially. And we can sort of talk about intra training nutrition at, you know, later in the podcast. Yeah. So essentially we want to make sure people are going in fueled so they can do the session and they can go hard enough. And this is probably step one of paradigm shift. People actually start realizing that if they've been doing like fasted cardio, if they've been doing hit sessions where the goal has been burning calories, they don't necessarily feel strong doing those sessions, because the goal is, you know, it might have been in the past to lose weight. Whereas this time we're going into a training session with the goal of maxing out that session. So performance is the key. We want to be able to push as hard as possible, because if we can't push maximally in a session, we aren't necessarily going to be able to stimulate the adaptation. We're not going to be able to stress the body enough to get a change. If I'm half-assing training, I'm not going to be able to push my body to the point where it goes, oh, I need to change. Whereas we need to be able to fuel so that I can push my body enough to go, oh, that was too hard, I need to be better next week. And that sort of kickstarts the adaptation, the muscle growth adaptation after trainings.
Okay, so we're looking for change, we're using food, and there's a lot of energy involved in that. What systems are we looking at with strength sports, like the fuel mix?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, when you look at powerlifting, like, you know, the lift is only like 2, 3, 4 seconds, depending on how long
the grind is. You haven't seen caffeine yet. What's going on? Sorry, I didn't mean to throw you off then.
Or caffeine is always an issue. When we're looking at those short sort of phosphagen systems when we're doing short, sharp lifts. But when we move into strongman, we could be going for up to a minute. And sometimes, so we're going into that sort of bit more glycolytic glycolysis in those sort of sessions. But
do you just want to explain what that is for the people out there that may not know?
Yeah. So when we're looking at energy systems, you know, we've got the short, sharp, you know, we're using the energy that's stored in our muscles immediately, and that lasts about 10 seconds. And then as we go through sort of more glycolysis, we've got a little bit more oxygen to use to burn as energy. We might be, that's sort of the more endurance based. And then we've got that sort of middle ground where we're using a little bit of glucose from our bloodstream and in our muscles. And we're also using a little bit of oxygen to release energy as well. So when we're working with strength athletes, we are working in time frames of anywhere from, you know, 2 seconds to get the bar up if it's a nice quick lift, but we also might be working up to a minute. So we need to sort of look at energy systems a little bit when it comes to strength sports. We don't need to necessarily be fueling in the same way that we would an endurance athlete, where, you know, glycogen depletion is a possibility after over 90 minutes of continuous movement. But we also want to make sure that the athlete has enough fuel in the tank. We're not probably going to be burning out glycogen in a weightlifting session, but we're going to feel pretty uncomfortable doing maximal lifts. And it takes, you know, 3 to 5 minutes to actually recover from a maximal lift, like a 1 RM rep max. So, you know, we're looking at that stuff when it comes to strength-based sports.
So what type of things are you looking at from the training perspective? If someone comes to you and says, I'm a strength athlete, I'm doing this, A, B, C, D, what type of things are you looking for? Like, obviously, they're coming to you because fatigue is a driver. Is that where we're at here?
Fatigue's a big one, especially going into a new training regime. Yep. I think for people that don't quite understand, if they've never done a strength program before, it can be quite a shock. Not because, I mean, again, when you're doing an endurance space, like a HIIT session or a cardio session, you get that feedback straight away. You get, so like, as soon as you finish the session, you're like, I'm zonked. Whereas with weightlifting, you might not feel sweaty and gross all the time. Like, you might only be doing 10 reps in a session, you know, on a big, big, heavy day. But the fatigue afterwards is definitely something that people feel, and it can take them actually longer to recover from a strength-based session. When I finish a cardio session, like, once my heart rate's back down to normal, I might have done a little bit of damage, but, you know, I've recovered fairly quickly. Whereas because of the extent of the damage to the muscle in a weight session, we're getting a little bit more of a cumulative effect of fatigue across a training session week. And so, I mean, when we're looking at fatigue, we want to, like with strength sports, the ability to produce force is a really big part.
Force.
Okay, yeah. So that's a critical part of it. So as we see people go through the week, their ability to, if they're not fueling properly, their ability to produce that force becomes limited. And that's normally due to sort of a cumulative effect of fatigue across the week. So if we're not looking at our post-training refueling, that's going to become more and more apparent as they go. So
I'm not sure if this is a silly question or not, but say someone is suffering from what you just talked about there. Say they do fuel up the next day. Is it instant comeback? Where are we at? Like, is there any research in relation to the continuity of that nutrition program versus a quick backup?
There probably is research on that. I wouldn't know any sort of studies just off the top of my head. But in terms of being able to recover adequately, definitely going to be a benefit if you are consistent with getting, you know, carbohydrates to replenish whatever energy that you might have used in that training session, adequate protein spread out, distributed across the day evenly. Because we're not just recovering in the hour after a training session, we're recovering in the 24, 48 hours that it takes to sort of allow your muscle to remodel, to grow and all that kind of gig, repair the damage that's been done. Consistency with nutrition post-training, whilst that anabolic window gig, you know, is not necessarily gospel, it definitely is an important period in that, you know, the hour, 2 hours after training. But we also, for a strength athlete, we need to be looking 24 hours, like around the clock, essentially, making sure that, again, we've got that sort of adequate energy in order to grow the muscle, adequate protein in order to build, you know, the building blocks for muscle, and also that we're resting as well. So you can't necessarily get away with the same sort of amount of sessions unless it's the program that you're doing is specifically designed to overreach. We can't get away with overreaching as much as we can with, say, cardio when we're looking at strength athletes.
So what happens to us over weeks of hard training?
Essentially, I mean, we're building up that sort of lean muscle. So when we do a training session, it's sort of too hard. We're sort of causing that sort of micro tears in the muscle, and our body has to sort of upregulate the cells, the cellular material in order to build more lean muscle mass. And that means that next time we come back, we've increased the capacity of the muscle to lift more. And also we've got that neurological adaptation so that our body is actually used to recruiting that many muscle fibers in order to lift heavier. So we've kind of got two things going on. We've got the actual physical growth of the muscle, but we've also got that neurological adaptation to training whereby, you know, we're able to recruit more efficiently. You know, we're about able to recruit a lot more muscle fibers to lift that as well. So it's a technique thing just as much as it is, you know, an actual physical capacity to lift more. But as we go through like a training program, we'll be sort of building week upon week with those sort of two things. And there's a little bit of cardiovascular fitness involved in weights training. I think people kind of miss that as well. I mean, they always, the joke among, you know, the strong folk is, you know, anything more than 5 reps is cardio.
Yeah.
And you do feel your heart rate going up. So anyone who refutes that, I would say that it's definitely, there's a component of cardio in there.
So just while we're touching on the during training fatigue, what about hydration? Is it just as important as the food for a strength athlete?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. When you look at the composition of the muscle fiber, I mean, from a fatigue perspective, you know, we know that we get a little bit of fatigue when we're not properly hydrated. Cognitive function is not as good, but our muscle is a really large component of water in the muscle. So we want to be making sure that hydration levels, you know, hydration across the board with sports nutrition, you know, can be missed by many people. But when we're looking at the composition of the muscle fiber, it makes sense that if it's, you know, our body is adequately hydrated, that, you know, we're going to be performing better as well. So yeah, definitely one to tick off, ensuring that there's adequate hydration across the day, starting the day hydrated, but also going into training sessions hydrated as well.
And the characteristics of a strength athlete sport is what, how many, 3 to 7 sessions a week?
Well, it depends. Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, it depends on the type of lifting that you're doing. We say like a bodybuilding, you know, we're looking at it like an upper body, lower body split, or we might be, you know, splitting up the body into different muscle groups. It tends to be a little bit different with, say, like powerlifting, strongman, Olympic lifting. You'll do your main lifts, yep. Like you might do your compound lifts, and then there might be a little bit of accessory work towards the end. But you might be doing as little as 3 sessions a week, and you'd still be able to get some good runs on the board. And especially for people who are busy, knowing that you can only do, you know, if you can only do 3 sessions, we can get some good runs on the board. But coming into competition, or you might be doing a bit of a phase of overload, you could be training up to sort of 7 sessions a week. Some people sort of 10 sessions a week, depending on how hardcore you are. But again, modulating your nutrition according to how many times a week you train as well. So this is when we can implement, you know, training day nutrition versus rest day nutrition as well, and shaking it up a little bit with that. Yeah, it depends on the type of lifting that you're doing. You know, Olympic lifting, there's the, you know, again, the key lifts for Olympic lifting, snatch, clean and jerk, and then there'll always be the sort of accessory work, but it might be more work up front and then some lighter stuff during the week, or, you know, depending on how your training session is split up. But then with like a CrossFit athlete, they're a strength athlete. It's important that they can move weight quickly. However, they need to balance that out probably a lot more carefully than to the other lifters as well, because they've got so many modalities that they need to train across. Their nutrition will vary greatly as well, and generally it's just sort of a calories thing as well.
So just maintaining a neutral position here, Harriet, like obviously the best diet to follow is keto or some type of carnivore. No, let's be honest.
Snake diet.
Oh, wow, that's going to get some haters. Obviously, you're thinking vegan. If we're going to throw it left and right. What is like vegan, carnivore, keto? Where am I? Paleo? What am I doing here? I'm a strength athlete. Who should I be watching? What should I be looking at?
Nutrition-wise? I definitely think you should look at Instagram for nutrition advice.
Perfect.
You should find an influencer with at least 1 million followers and look out for the hashtag.
You're a couple short of 1 million, but why we've got you? What is your Instagram?
So I'm at Athletic Eating, and look, to be honest with you, I'm not that prolific, so my hashtag ads aren't as prolific, but you know, hoping to
like
work on that.
I like your Instagram account. I think it's good.
Why, thank you. I've been working very hard on that.
Do you lift heavy? Like, speaking of lifting heavy, like, we're just a little ad in the middle for Harriet here. Like, if you need a dietitian that can lift, what's your deadlift?
Well, I'm working at around the 135, 140 at the moment, which I have to say amongst my strong lady friends is a bit like piss weak, actually.
Okay.
However, it does sound impressive at general population parties.
Oh, I like the number. It was a big number for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pressing sort of 60, 65 overhead at the moment, which is fine. fun.
Young shoulders.
Well, this Arnold's prep has really gotten the shoulders popping. Haven't done this in a while, so we might have to widen the doorways here, actually.
Yeah, on the way through.
I'm going through sideways at the moment. It's a bit embarrassing.
So let's talk nutrition. What does it take to build extra muscle?
Well, there's three key things that we are looking at when it comes to building muscle, and it's pretty simple, and then we can build the sort of information into this. But essentially, you need solid training stimulus. So you need to be training in a manner that actually, you know, wrecks you enough for your body to want to change. We need to make sure that we have adequate protein intake. So protein building being the building blocks of muscle. And then we need adequate calories.
Do you have a per kilo number there we can look
at? Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, general population, you know, the recommendation is around the 0.8 grams per kilo of body weight.
You're good sedentary, sitting
on
your butt
person. If you're sitting down, public service, sitting down, doing not much, that's probably fine.
Stand up, people, go for a walk.
Absolutely, right now, go for a walk with this podcast. But for us strong people, depending on training age and training volume, I'm normally hitting around the 1.5 to 2 grams per kilo of body weight of protein. If I've got somebody who's doing a weight cut and I want them to maintain their lean muscle mass, but I'm cutting their calories a little bit, unfortunately, poor thing, we are probably looking at bumping that up just a wee bit, up to sort of maybe 2.5 to 3 grams. That's fairly extreme, and that's a lot of protein to be eating. Like, it's actually quite hard for people to get that in, but that sort of preservation of lean muscle mass in a caloric deficit does require that higher amount of protein to be consumed. But yeah, so 1.5 to 2 is normally a good one. 1.5 is very doable. 2 starts becoming a lot of chicken, but you know, it helps. It all helps because, you know, again, it's so important to the being able to build that muscle.
Why chicken?
Oh, I just said chicken. It could be any protein source. So I would also encourage people to go for a variety of protein sources. So, you know, lean meats, eggs, dairy, whey protein. I find shakes I have to include a lot more frequently when I am doing like a bit of a weight cut or if I am doing a heavy training session because I do find it hard to eat.
Simplicity.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Portable.
Convenience.
And yeah, so varying it up a little bit as well. Again,
and you mentioned whey and just picking your brain here from a sports supplement point of view.
Yes.
Not a whey casein blend. You're definitely a whey person after a strength session.
To be honest with you, I don't think the difference between using, like, obviously there is a slight delay in absorption with casein. It's a slower absorbing protein.
And what's important here to get some up quickly, get it all in quickly? Where are we at?
Distribution is probably the most important thing rather than speed. As long as, if you think about like your amino acid pool, when we eat protein, it gets broken down into amino acids. And those amino acids are the individual building blocks. And when I need to build a protein in my body, my muscle might be like, yo, body, I've just done a weight lifting session and we need to enhance the capacity of that muscle for next time. So the body will call upon the amino acids that are, you know, the components of lean muscle mass and use those amino acids to build muscle. If we're low in even one of those amino acids, it means that whole process is slowed up. So by ensuring that we have adequate pulses of protein across the day means that at any time we can be calling up, you know, pulling from amino acid pool to build proteins in our body. So distribution is probably the most important part. Timing becomes more important if you are in a calorie deficit. So if you're cutting weight or if you're bodybuilder or whatever, that's when timing is probably more critical.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, eating regular meals, whether it's 4 to 6 meals per day, that comes down to personal preference. Hitting the, I think it's 0.3 grams per kilo of body weight per meal would be the recommendation based off research by somebody who I cannot remember.
But we'll put a link below this where you can go and have a look at it at bodyscience.com.au/podcast.
That's it.
So you mentioned earlier, and I'm going to touch on this because I know you hate talking about it, the anabolic window. You mentioned that before, like you potentially have a lot of new people going to write to you soon. What's the go with that? Like back in the old day, it was all about that 30 to 40 minutes after training, 20 if you were really, you know, percenter.
So I remember reading, I can't remember the name of the book, but it was probably one of my first like bodybuilding books I read like first year uni, and I was like, yeah, this is the Bible. I'm going to make sure I have my protein shake as I'm walking out the door. Otherwise, my finger's going to be slammed and the anabolic window will be closed. You know, when we are training, post-training, there tends to be a shift in the body's machinery, cellular machinery, that says that we're ready to make some changes in that post-training period. So the body is in a heightened state for change. So we've got, you know, the cells are ready to take up nutrients a little bit more so in that post training period. So getting nutrition in and recovering from that session is super important, because we've got a little bit of a competitive advantage in that hour or so after training. So it's not a completely defunct theory. It's just, it's not as important and as critical as if I have an adequate diet across the day, I buy myself a little bit of leeway with that anabolic window.
So talking timing, if I'm going to bed at 8 o'clock, had a feed at 6, and I'm getting up at 5 o'clock and hitting the gym and doing a power session.
Yeah.
I haven't eaten before I go. Naughty.
Or look, it kind of depends. If that's something that you do habitually, your body gets used to that.
Okay.
So it probably does come down to personal preference and habit. Look, it's always going to be ideal to get protein around your training. That message doesn't really change. And also we're looking at that amino acid pool. We want to make sure that those substrates are ready to build as required. Are you going into a training session ready to go hard? If you are mildly fasted, I would say, look, if that's what you do, then it's probably fine. Could you be doing better? Maybe. I mean, that's an annoying answer, but I would always say...
Can someone remove the fence post?
I'm sitting on it, Greg. You can't move it. But, you know, I think it's important to sort of go, okay, what's the goal here? Am I trying to fast, or am I trying to build lean muscle mass? And, you know, most of the research and most of the evidence is pointing towards the fact that going into a training session with a fuel tank that is full is going to be more beneficial than trying to stress your body out that little bit more by being fasted. That's kind of where the answer is at. More is more.
Okay. This could be a really stupid question. What type of macros are we running strength athlete program? Like, just ballpark. I know everyone's different.
Yeah. Everybody's different.
It's going to open that fence up, okay? Soon.
Open the gate. Again, personal preference is a big one, yep. But when I always start with protein intake, and we touched on it just before. So when I'm putting together a plan for somebody, my first port of call is figuring out how many calories this person currently having, how many calories do they need to have, what's their training load, volume, frequency, da 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 da. Then my first stop is with macros is protein. So I'm making sure that they're hitting that 1.5 to 2 grams per kilo body weight of protein. Yep. First stop. So in terms of percentages, I don't really use that, because that can get quite skewed according to actually how many calories that person is eating.
Okay.
So I'd normally go off grams per kilo of body weight. Then I'd be looking at carbohydrate intake. Some people enjoy a higher carb diet, and I would say for the most part, if you're working with athletes, and yet that's going to be the most appropriate course to take. Strength athletes, though, however, like, we're not maxing out a glycogen all the time, so we can probably afford to be slightly lower carb than, say, an endurance athlete. So that's where we can have a little bit of wiggle room. If somebody is on a lower carb diet, I will be preferencing carbohydrates around their training, and it might be as sort of low for some people as 2.5 grams per kilo of body weight, which is quite low for somebody who's active. But for somebody who's trying to gain weight during like a massing cycle, trying to put on some muscle, we might be putting them up to 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 grams per kilo of body weight, depending on how big the person is. But, you know, having worked with some people who are sort of sitting up at the 110, 120 kilos, I love making those meal plans because they're just delicious.
So they look good on paper.
So many good calories in there. And I'm like, yes, nice. I want to be heavyweight.
And where are you at with fat?
Fats. And then I suppose once I've got carbs and proteins sort of sorted out, I'm looking at fat intake, absolutely. And it's super important macronutrient in terms of vitamin absorption,
yep.
But also from a hormonal perspective, really important to have adequate protein, adequate fat intake to ensure sort of the athlete is hormonally healthy. And, you know, we can see during a weight cut, you know, fat is the macronutrient that has the most calories in it, and that's the one that tends to get dropped because of that fact, hence the chicken, lean meats. But we want to be ensuring, you know, rule of thumb would be somewhere around 1 gram minimum per kilo of body weight, but that can be upwards just depending on the calorie budget of the person.
And are you digging into the fat type?
Oh, you know, absolutely. We want to make sure that I don't dig into it too hard, to be honest with you, but I am encouraging people to eat real food, whole foods, and then when that happens, they're looking at the quality of the fat. We did do a good podcast on fats, which we could probably circle back to for people who want to find out more about fat type. But monounsaturated, polyunsaturated fats, oily fish, nuts, seeds, avocado, those sorts of ones I'm going for. We are going to get some fats from meat as well. There'll be a little bit of saturated fat in that. But as long as there's a variety there and they're eating mainly whole foods, I don't think you can go too wrong with the fat profile. There's probably a lot more information that could go into that, but probably just for the sake of simplicity here today, you know, whole foods. foods and variety is probably the key for that.
And how do those macros differ to, say, the 98 gym world where the crew's doing 6 sessions minimum a week, they're monitoring performance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're pushing limits, they're doing team events around all that.
Yeah.
So out of your traditional strength athlete.
If you're just doing straight strength powerlifting, you might be doing 4 sessions a week. You've got a good amount of time to recover from them. You're not looking at running marathons or doing a ski, you know, whatever in between. There's quite a big difference, and I would really be looking at preferencing carbohydrates and protein. And obviously fats are like in there as well, but I'm ensuring that they're having adequate carbohydrates to actually fuel those training sessions, because
some of them hit an hour, 45 minutes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. When you look at someone like Kate Hilliard's training, huge volume. And to be able to sort of back up, you need to be resting, you need to be eating, because otherwise, you know, you're not, when we talk about like training adaptations, you're cutting yourself short in terms of the adaptations you can get. If you think about trying to put an extension on the house, when we're doing exercise, we are wanting to build lean muscle mass, which requires more bricks, but we also want that cellular adaptation for looking specifically at the 98 sort of sessions. They're looking at cellular adaptations, increasing mitochondria, which are the energy, oxygen sort of powerhouses of the cell. They want to build muscle, but they also want to build the capacity of the cell. We're making sure that they're having adequate carbohydrates and total calories, protein to recover from there as well. So when we're doing, so I suppose that would come under probably more of a CrossFit-y style.
Oh, they'll love you saying that.
I'm going to get burnt at the stake.
You're in trouble. Steak. Well, you can bring it back with steak down there, because they don't mind a few steaks down there.
Multimodality training, we'll call it. You know, you have to pay more attention to your nutrition.
Multimodality training. Mm. So do you look after Kate? Do you do her?
We have worked together.
You talk together?
Yes, yes.
I hope you don't mind us talking about you for a second, Kate. But Kate's a vegan athlete.
Yes, she is.
So how do you get around what she's doing? I mean, she's got a couple of world records on the ski erg.
Yep.
How do you get around her diet from a vegan perspective? Because you've focused heavily on protein is a key thing here in relation to strength athletes. What are you doing? And I'm going to get crucified for saying vegans don't have protein. That's not what I'm saying. How are you addressing that with Kate? Because she's not just doing the sessions there. She's off swimming, running, and going to other. She's just a nut, really, when you think about it.
He's
a weapon, I should say.
Seven minute 2K erg, and then roll over and do a 150 kilo deadlift. That's pretty impressive. So
what are you doing for her? Well, what have you two discussed, I should say?
We've talked about the types of protein and where she gets protein from. You know, nuts, seeds. We use the clean protein the vegan protein, the bars as well.
What was that protein again? The clean bars?
The clean bars as well, good snack. But I'm also looking at carbohydrates around her training. Yeah, but the protein intake is probably the one that we're looking at focusing at the most, plus her micronutrients as well, because iron, B12, omegas, omega-3s are probably the key ones that we're looking at.
A little more challenging on a vegan diet.
Yeah, you just have to be more diligent. There's no worries with being a vegan athlete, and total energy intake as well, and just making sure she has the capacity to do what she does best, and looking at her goals for the year, and I suppose periodizing her nutrition accordingly. So probably a little bit more energy at some stages through the year, and then we can ease back on the energy intake and go for a bit more of an adaptation phase and other areas of the year as well. So with vegans, vegetarians, it's just being aware of what you might be missing out on from certain food groups, and just being across where you can get those sources from and where you might need to use some smart supplementation.
And standing behind her is someone like Kev Toonen, who's carnivore at the moment. How do you deal with, because I know you do Kev's dietetics, you're not the one who suggested he should do carnivore. How do you work with Kev on his performance in relation to when he's eating carnivore? Well, that's I don't really want to answer that Greg question. So
me and Kevin have cut ties.
You're out, Kev. But is Kev using carbs at certain times around certain performance aspects?
Look, at this stage, I don't think he... I think he was just doing the experimentation.
Oh, outside of his... I know he's experimenting with carnivore, but he eats a fairly meat-heavy diet.
Yeah. And then the message is the same. Like when he's probably...
Him and I send meat pictures to each other.
Yeah.
Meat shopping, that type of stuff.
Check my steak out, bro. Look, it'd be the same thing. Like there's going to be an element of adaptation to anybody who's reduced their carbohydrate intake. So he's probably become more efficient at utilizing fats and protein in some cases as energy. So if that's the case, you know, hypothetically speaking, you know, taking on a lower carb diet, you will adapt to that, and your body will upregulate the machinery in the cell that utilizes fat as energy. It's the same with ketogenic. It's the same with any other sort of low carb style of eating. So yeah, essentially, look, if that's sort of there's probably a period of 2-3 months where that's occurring. I'll still fall back and say that carbohydrates, if you want to go far, fast, you want to go on carbs, but you can adapt. So I'm not saying that it's completely, you know, impossible for an athlete to be fast if they're doing a low carb diet, and that's not the case. We do have those people who appear to be like highly functional. So there are N equals one out there, but for the most part, in terms of performance, we see that low carb might be something that you'd utilize during an adaptation phase to stress the body out that little bit extra, so that once you add in the carbohydrates, you're more efficient. There is some evidence, especially sort of by Louise Burke, who's shown that we might actually be impairing our use of carbohydrates by going low carb rather than adapting to it. So, you know, we want to look at what do you want your diet to look like long term, and if there are carbohydrates in your future, I would wonder if it might be beneficial to at least ensure that you are able to process them, because we do again see that down regulation of the machinery associated with carbohydrate utilization once we stop using it, because it's not required in the body. And also we'd probably see a bit of a change in our bacteria profile in our gut accordingly as well, because you know, we'll be starving out those sort of the carbohydrates loving, well, the bacteria that are more associated with sort of a fibrous diet as opposed to a non-fibrous carnivore diet. So if long term, you know, your goal is to eat an omnivorous diet, is long term reduction in those foods beneficial? Look, it might be for personal experimentation, which is like totally fine. We're all adults. I'd want to just be making sure that you're able to do both. I'm always going for metabolic flexibility over rigidity.
What do you mean by metabolic flexibility?
I want to be able to use carbs efficiently. I also want to be able to use fats efficiently, and I want to be efficient at swapping between the two. So this is a sort of a concept that is becoming more prolific amongst athletes. I might put in an adaptation phase into one of my athletes' plan whereby they're going into a session fasted or they're going into a session low carb. We're pushing those adaptations in the cell, upregulating the mitochondrial biogenesis, big word for basically making sure that we've got more of those energy producing units in the cell. And we might do that for a block of 4 weeks. So we might take them low carb for 4 weeks, but it might be relative low carb. It might be low carb for the first half of the day and then we replenish them. So we can shift carbs around and still get that same adaptation without going classically low carb. And so that would be an adaptation phase, whereas we might be going for a performance phase when we know that the person is going to be, if you want to go balls to wall, all out effort, they're going on carbs and they're the people who tend to be winning. And that's sort of based off sort of research as well. So we might be able to go pretty darn well on a high fat diet, but if we want to be winning stuff, generally speaking, we're looking at carbs as the substrate that's doing that.
So Harriet, let's start to summarize this. Day-to-day nutrition for a strength athlete.
Cool. So the first place I would be starting at is, when are you training? So some people train in the morning, some people train at lunchtime, some people train multiple times during the day, da 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 da. First thing is assessing where the training session is, and then I will generally be concentrating carbohydrate intake before and after, as well as protein intake pulsed across the day. So ensuring that every meal, every main meal, I'm having a source of quality protein.
No donuts.
There is always room for donuts.
Beautiful.
Especially in the strongman community.
Yes, love a good donut. What other goals are we looking at?
We are looking at ensuring adequate calories. So looking at the body composition of the person sitting in front of me when I'm saying this stuff, we have to make sure that if I'm working with a lean individual, we're adding in calories, because it takes around 2,500 to 3,000 calories to build half a kilo of muscle. There's actually quite a lot of extra calories. So if we're looking at an extra half a kilo of muscle a week, we want to be adding in around a sort of extra 3,000 calories to that person's diet across the week. If we're working with somebody who has a little bit of extra body fat to roll with, the calorie surplus doesn't have to be as aggressive, because if they're looking at losing a little bit of fat, gaining a little bit of muscle, if we have them in a mild energy deficit, they're not going to be as much of a disadvantage, because the fat stores in their body are going to help buffer that deficit.
So anything about balance between long-term health and short-term health we should be looking at in our day-to-day nutrition?
Absolutely. So with a strength-based athlete, day to day, we want to be making sure that we're also getting in those micronutrients as well. So we're looking at diet quality. We're not just looking at macros. We want to be making sure that, you know, we're meeting calories, we're hitting our protein target, fat target, carbohydrate target, but we're also including lots of color in our diet.
Generally, I was waiting for the color bit. Let's color that plate up.
Dietitians love color. Talking about color, anthracyclines, polyphenols. It's funny, people mock, but they're still not doing it.
Exactly.
I was in a room yesterday with a group of people and I asked how many people were eating enough vegetables and zero were. So until people start eating properly, like adults, I will keep telling people to eat vegetables.
Well, you're going to make a good grandma one day.
Eat your veggies. Hopefully I don't have to keep saying this. Hopefully people actually do it. We want to be making sure that long term there's that sort of health in yep. there as well. And they can go hand in hand, absolutely.
And are you working on outside of, and I'll use a basic word, macros, are you looking at things like inflammation? You're looking at joint health and creating meal plans?
Yeah, look, I mean, that's always a component in there as well. For the nature of strength sports, there's going to be a lot of stress on the body. There's going to be a lot of inflammation in the body. So we're, you know, educating people about what foods are anti-inflammatory. And surprise, surprise, a lot of the foods that we would eat as a part of a healthy diet are anti-inflammatory.
There you go.
Madness. I know. Donuts, unfortunately, not anti-inflammatory.
Someone needs to bring out an anti-inflammatory, low-fat or fat-burning donut. It's all about the delivery.
Let's drop everything. Go make that donut.
Would you like the drink version, the tablet version or the donut version? And you mentioned metabolic flexibility. Is there anything day-to-day nutrition we should be looking at there?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I mean, periodizing your training, periodizing your nutrition to match that. Yep. So if you're trying to lean out to get into a weight class, you might be looking at reducing carbohydrates for a small amount of time. We also have to balance that out with performance. And if you're going through a performance phase, we want to be increasing the carbohydrate intake there as well. So, you know, we want to be able to use both carbs and fats as our fuel substrate, but knowing what your goals are is probably the first step. And then we can kind of, you know, manage your nutrition around that. And then we look at sort of long-term nutrition versus acute weight cuts, and that's definitely something I do a lot of work in, weight cut for sport. But again, I think that's a whole other sort of kettle of fish that we'll
might do another
into.
One on that. Absolutely. So what about, you've talked about competition day and leading up to competition. What about after competition? Is there, you know, you've heard the term reverse dieting
reverse
and all types
dieting.
Of things thrown around in the world. So where are you at after competition? Is it just straight down for pizza and donuts, or is it?
Generally, yes. Yeah. Yes, it is. If I told a strong man or powerlifter that they weren't allowed pizza and donuts,
don't eat your vegetables.
Yeah. I would be thrown out of the arena, and they probably could do it too. Recovery really depends on what their lead-in was like. Mm-hmm. If you know they've done a weight cut, then we're looking at, you know, increasing their calorie intake back up. But, you know, recovery is the same as post-training as well after a competition. But there's also probably a little bit more of a requirement for rest post-training. And again, that stress, inflammation, we want to making sure that the diet is adequate enough to support the recovery. After, like, you know, event day is quite stressful on the body. You know, you want to nap every 5 minutes in between events. It just shows, you know, the adrenaline and the stress of a competition day is huge. Not jumping straight back into training and expecting your body to do what it was doing a week ago is really important. It might be up to like a month where mentally you are in the stage where you could get back into training properly. It's like with anything, there's a big build up to a competition, and there is generally speaking a corresponding low after that. And that's motivation wise. You've asked a lot of your body. Generally speaking, you're hanging on by the skin of your teeth going into competition, expecting your body to bounce back and also not to put on body fat after competition, having reduced your training volume and probably eating more. You know, we got to just be aware that there is a washout period from any competition, any large event in life. There's a washout period. So post-competition blues, whether it's bodybuilding, whether it's strongman, whether it's powerlifting, whether it's Olympic lifting, is a thing. And just being mentally aware for that. And I always sort of encourage people to have a couple of weeks where you're just eating ad lib, no worries, and also enjoying your training again. So go do something different for a little bit afterwards just to get your mojo back a bit, and then getting back into it being sensible. But just being aware that there is, for most people, a washout. There is a bit of like a who am I, what am I doing kind of feeling. But that passes. And if you're aware of it, it passes a lot quicker because you're expecting it.
So you've talked about, look, just summing up, we're a sports nutrition company and make sports nutrition. So I'm going to throw this one out there. You've talked about the potential to incorporate protein powders, whether vegan or whey-based or whey casein-based. What else are you getting people to take in strength athletes?
Well, when we're talking about energy production and performance with those short, sharp bursts, I'm definitely looking at a creatine supplement for most strength athletes if they want to take a supplement. So creatine assists with the energy production. Basically, you can go faster for longer. So that's definitely something I would be looking at. Caffeine.
Finally got it in.
My good old friend, caffeine. Yeah, definitely. Look, there's day-to-day caffeine consumption, which for some people might be 2 cups of coffee a day, 180 milligrams. But then we've got the actual dosage for performance enhancement, and that's sort of sitting up the sort of 3 milligrams per kilo body weight. There's, you know, some studies that show upwards of that sort of 6 milligrams per kilo body weight, which is really high. But we're not taking that habitually day-to-day, are we, Greg?
No, we're not.
We're using that as a performance enhancement.
We'll define day-to-day later.
No, we're looking at that 3 milligrams as a rule of thumb per kilo of body weight as a performance enhancement. I would be looking at the timing of caffeine during training. Mm-hmm. So sort of half an hour before a big training session, giving it time to kick in. If you're training at nighttime, caffeine can impair your ability to recover. So taking sort of large doses of caffeine after, say, 4 o'clock, because caffeine's got a half-life of about 6 hours, give or take the person, I would be looking at whether or not that's going to be hindering the recovery process. So it's a risk versus reward. Is the benefit of taking caffeine at nighttime going to outweigh the risk of not being able to sleep afterwards?
I'm not a dietitian, but I'm going to say yes.
Yep, absolutely. And then also looking at on competition day when you take it. So
yeah, that's a big one actually.
Yeah, so I like to push caffeine intake. Like I might get an athlete who habitually takes caffeine. I wouldn't start anything that you haven't done before on competition day, but I might look at caffeine. Yeah, they might have their initial morning coffee, which is like a sort of a slow start to the day, but targeting caffeine towards the latter events, especially for strongman. There's 5 events in a day, and then generally they're 45 to an hour between events. It's yep. just enough time to get really sleepy and really like low. So I generally would tell people to use caffeine in the latter half of the day just to perk you up. The first couple of events, you're normally pretty sparky as the fatigue load increases across the day. And this might be the same for powerlifting. You've got 9 lifts, Olympic lifting, I think it might be 6. And then CrossFit again, you might have 4, 3 wads across the day. I'd be utilizing caffeine towards the latter end of the day.
What about around food? Where are you at with around food with caffeine? On that comp day where you're using it multiple times during the day for a performance benefit? Doesn't matter?
Off the top of my head, there probably is an interaction with food and absorption. I don't actually know that off the top of my head, but I am making sure, like on comp day, that they're, you know, regular snacks across the day as well to keep the blood sugar levels nice and high. But I'm really looking at back ending the caffeine intake towards the latter end of the day to give them a bit of a pep up when they're feeling quite sleepy, because, you know, we get that fatigue from lifting weights and the adrenaline, we get a corresponding low after that. So using the anti-fatigue properties of caffeine to boost people up. So I would use like a caffeine supplement around then. I actually really like the Chaos pre-trainer for that, because you've got the creatine component as well as the caffeine component. So it's quite nice.
It's pretty simple but effective.
Yeah, that's the one. And then look, depending on the person, if they're in a calorie deficit, if they're doing a weight cut, I might be looking at other supplements for them just according to the individual. Female athletes, I'm definitely screening them for low iron. So I might be looking at an iron supplement. I might be looking at a general multivitamin just in case if they are in a low calorie state, just as a insurance policy in essence. And also looking at maybe potentially a fish oil in some cases if their habitual intake of omega-3s is quite low, just as a general sort of broad brushstrokes kind of gig.
Nice. Well, that is Harriet Walker, registered sports dietitian, accredited, is the right word to use there. Harriet, your website is
athleticeating.com.au, and same with my Instagram handle @athleticeating for all the fun sports nutrition facts and recipes.
Get on board with Harriet. She knows the goods. She lifts heavy. Boom. Game out. We're finished. Enjoy, people. Thank you.
Bye.
Today's podcast was brought to you by our partners in Fit, Happy and Healthy, ASN, Nutrition Warehouse, DY Discount Vitamins, Fat Burners Only, Evelyn Fay, Mr. Supplement, or find a retailer online at bodyscience.com.au/retailers.